Someone likely would have come through to report it.
Assuming anyone could. The portal abruptly shimmered again. With some relief, they watched for the gnomish leader to step through. But what took shape within at first looked like nothing with which the arch-druid at least was familiar. It had two long legs bent back like a bird's, a stout, round carriage, and what seemed two pairs of arms, the upper ones much smaller than the lower duo. For its size and girth, it also appeared to have a relatively tiny head. The figure fully formed, and despite all his concerns, Malfurion could not help chuckling quietly at the newcomer. The bald gnome had the large-nosed, round face of his ilk, and in some manner resembled a short, fat human, although there was no known link between the two races. This particular gnome, despite being elder in status, seemed as animated as a child. He was not so tall. In fact, standing, he was a foot shorter than Curdren, and certainly barely a third of the latter's bulk. Malfurion had to make all these assumptions from past visits, for most of the gnome was hidden by what had first appeared to be his body, and was instead some fantastical walking device. The newcomer raised a pair of odd goggles, then peered at the night elves with inquisitive eyes.
"High Priestess Tyrande Whisperwind, and Archdruid Malfurion Stormrage," the gnome rattled off at a breathtaking rate of speech. "I am pleased to be here."
"High Tinker Gelbin Mechatork, you are most welcome," Tyrande declared. Gelbin tugged on his short white beard in thought, then grinned. The machine marched him forward until he was within a yard of his hosts. The huge right arm of the machine suddenly shot toward Malfurion. Although not frightened, the archdruid chose caution and took a step back. A three-fingered hand paused within a couple of inches of his chest.
"Oh, do excuse me. I've been trying these experimental arm attachments for the newest mechanostriders. Still fine-tuning the movements. I only meant to have it shake hands."
Steeling himself, Malfurion reached to the mechanical hand. The gnome shifted a lever, and the hand gripped the night elf's own. Tyrande let out a slight gasp of concern, but Malfurion simply did as the High Tinker suggested, shaking the walker's hand. The moment that was done, the fingers released their hold on the night elf, and the arm retracted. With clinical interest, Gelbin Mechatork leaned over and asked, "How was the pressure? Any fractures or breaks?"
"No, none at all."
"Ah, finally."
Gelbin sat back in triumph. Behind the walker, other gnomes stepped through the portal. Unlike their leader, they came in on foot, although all wore objects or gear that clearly were devices of their own manufacture. They peered up at the High Tinker, then at the Night Elves. Tyrande greeted the rest of the party, then said to Gelbin,
"We have food and drink prepared, and space set aside for your endeavors."
"Wonderful. We've still some equipment to bring up. Will we be near where your sentinels practice their archery? Dwendal here has a new possible weapon that may be able to fire 50 arrows in a minute, if it would just stop doing so in every direction each time."
Dwendal, a red-headed gnome clearly much younger than most of his party, looked a bit sheepish.
"I have seen to those arrangements as well, High Tinker. If you will follow these sisters."
Making some adjustments, Gelbin did as she bade. The walker strode like a large, flightless bird after the priestesses. Gelbin's companions, the huge sacks each carried clanking ominously, tried to keep up as best they could. Watching the gnomes, Tyrande murmured,
"That is nearly everyone but Stormwind."
"Yes. For the sake of the others, we will not be able to hold off."
The High Priestess looked disturbed.
"Elun would not have granted me that vision if it did not have significance to the summit. Varian Rin must arrive soon."
"We can only." A terrible uproar erupted from the direction of where the gnomes had gone. Without hesitation, both night elves rushed to see what was happening. They found Gelbin and his party confronted by Druken and several of the dark iron dwarves.
The dwarves had their axes and blades out, and their faces were filled with fury. Gelban had the arms of his walker extended toward the dark iron emissary, but it was clear that the High Tinker was not proposing that Drukin shake hands. Behind Gelban, the rest of the gnomes had drawn a variety of odd-looking but no less sinister devices. Even Gelban himself had stashed on his mount a weapon the Night Elves recognized as Wrench Caliber, so named in part because it was roughly shaped like the tool. The complex series of cogs, pistons, runes, and levers somehow enabled it to serve as a good mace. The other weapons were not so recognizable to the Archdruid and the High Priestess. Some resembled blunderbusses, while a few made absolutely no sense. However, in the hands of gnomes, they could only be dangerous, even to their wielders.
"Your tongue I'll cut out and slice up for meat between me bread," growled Drukin, clearly having uttered several threats already. "And that infernal device you sit on will make a good still for strong dwarven spirits."
"I am still very much in the early stages of testing the strength components of this mechanism," Gelban dryly responded. "It would be fascinating to discover just what force would be required for it to divide you in half."
Drukin's followers muttered, and two started for the gnomes. Drukin angrily waved the pair back.
"What is the meaning of this?" Malfurion called out in the hopes of quickly distracting the two sides. The dark iron seemed no more pleased to see him than they did the gnomes. A fiery-eyed Drukin waved his axe at Gelban.
This gnome tried to run me over with his stinking toy.
And I said that the incident was purely accidental.
Cease your babbling.
Drukin took a step toward the gnome. Both sides leaned in toward the inevitable struggle. But a brilliant silver glow coming between them startled the two factions. The dwarves and the gnomes pulled back. Tyronda lowered her hands and the glow dissipated. Striding between Drukin and Gelban, she calmly said, "Now, I am certain that this is a misunderstanding." The High Tinker had already admitted that his creation had some corrections that needed to be made, and perhaps should have taken those into account before moving among others. Also, Master Drukin may be wary of his surroundings, but he should understand that he was invited here, and that means that his safety is guaranteed by me and my husband, as it is for all honored guests. I only ask in turn that he respect that this guarantee applies to the others as well.
Yes. Yes. I suppose I should be a bit more cautious until the controls are fine-tuned, Gelban responded. He frowned. Although I am growing dubious about the worth of these arm attachments.
Drukin put away his weapon. With a grunt he said, "The fairness of the High Priestess and the Archdruid is known even to us. The journey's been long. I'll leave it at that." To the gnome's escort, Tyronda said, "Sisters, I believe you were leading High Tinker Gelban and his party to their quarters." They took the hint and immediately guided the gnomes on before hostilities could boil over again. At the same time, Drukin gave the High Priestess a cursory bow and led his companions off.
"And so it begins," the Archdruid muttered. "The pretense that all is well with each member of the Alliance is starting to unravel. Even the Dark Irons should have been able to understand that Gelban meant no harm, and the gnomes should have not become so defensive so quickly. Their nerves were clearly already frayed before their arrival."
"No one wishes to show weakness, my love, even if in these extraordinary times it would certainly be reasonable to do so. We already knew how terrible things are in some of the other regions. That they have all come here is a sign that, despite everything, the Alliance holds together."
Malfurion shook his head. "But to what extent?" She took his arm and led him off to the temple.
"That," the High Priestess answered soothingly, "we will find out come the morrow. Until then, there is little point in worrying too much."
Malfurion frowned but said nothing. As he and Tyronda headed off, though, He took one last look at the portal. But the one figure he hoped would materialize did not do so. And the Archdruid wondered if he truly ever would. Chapter 10. The Banquet. With all having arrived, save Stormwind, it behooved Malfurion to indeed see that the summit began. In order to build the mood to a positive level, he and Tyrande had agreed to host a banquet for all the guests. Accustomed to dealing with diurnal races, the Night Elves held the dinner banquet at sunset in an open area just beyond the confines of Darnassus. With food and drink of countless varieties set before them, and the tranquil forest nearby, the rulers, emissaries, and their staffs gradually relaxed. Even Drukin went out of his way and permitted food not brought by his vessel to be served to the Dark Irons, but only after his chosen taster had verified that nothing was poisoned. Night Elf musicians played not only music composed by their own race, but also favored works from among the peoples represented by the guests. There was only one common thread between the songs. All of them had been chosen to stir the heart, to suggest promise in the future. Yet there were still undertones of trouble brewing. Malfurion had spoken with more than one representative, and in the process sought to verify his suspicions concerning the state of each realm. What he had learned at times discouraged him far more than his confident face reflected. Among the dwarves, food was growing scarce, and old bitter rivalries threatened to engulf the race. To add to the troubles, many of their underground passages had collapsed during the cataclysm and still needed to be cleared. Thus far matters had not come to a head, but they needed only one incident to have that happen. The human domains also had to rebuild, and some of them were arguing over where current borders existed. Food and shelter were common problems, and Tyrande and Malfurion had already promised what aid the Night Elves could offer. Sisters of Elun and Druids now journeyed through each part of the Alliance, using their abilities to heal both the people and nature. But, from what Malfurion had heard, it was not enough. Still, overall, the banquet began to have the effect that he sought. The dwarves did not even argue among themselves, and the gnomes had not set off any disastrous inventions. Seated by Tyrande, Malfurion looked at the empty places to his right. "Gen indicated he would be arriving soon," the High Priestess informed her husband. "Edric just came with the message." "I thought I saw Edric, but I was not certain. There should be..." He hesitated as he caught sight of a shape nearing the banquet. "Odd. Who is that approaching now? It looks like... a Draenei." Tyrande squinted, something she was having to do more and more often, in the direction he was staring. "Not just any Draenei. That is Velen." Others began to notice the extremely tall figure. He stood nearly a foot taller than Malfurion, in the golden robes. His skin was alabaster white and his legs ended in thick, cloven hooves. The prophet had silver hair that reached past the shoulders and was set in ornate braids. He also had a matching beard that hung nearly to his waist. Velen's eyes were a brilliant blue and literally glowed. But most arresting of all was the luminous sigil just above his head, a sign of the gift he had been granted from the mystical Naru, energy beings from beyond Azeroth, beyond the otherworldly realm of Outland. They were creatures with an affinity to the holy light, of which Velen was now the chief prophet of the Draenei. Other Draenei wielded the power of the gift, but none so much as the figure before the assembly. In fact, the light not only emanated from the sigil, but at certain times almost seemed to faintly surround the august arrival, though it could have also merely been some trick of the eye. Velen himself radiated timelessness, with only wrinkles around his ancient eyes. However, up close, one could see minute cracks in his alabaster skin, as if he were a statue hewed eons ago. Malfurion did not know how old the Draenei was. Older than any night elf alive, that much was true. Even Drukin stood as Velen joined the banquet. Almost as one, the guests dipped their heads or bowed in respect. There was something about the Draenei that spoke of an inner peace and knowledge that most could only dream of attaining. Small wonder, since Velen was not only leader of his people, but a priest as well. The Draenei raised the crystalline head of a long purple staff in Malfurion's and Tyrande's direction. Both the large crystal and the smaller one at the bottom of the staff briefly shimmered brighter.
"Hail to you, Archdruid and High Priestess. Forgive this intrusion."
"The presence of the Prophet is never an intrusion," Tyrande returned as solemnly, speaking to the others as well as their new guest. "And Velen himself is ever welcome here as a friend to all. We are all grateful for the aid he and the Draenei gave us during the recent conflict with the demons of the Burning Legion." The priest bowed his head.
"It is we, the Draenei, who must thank the Alliance for taking us in, and even more so for standing against the foulness of the Burning Legion. Do not think so little of that. Never had there been a world that could stave off the demons, not merely once, but more."
Tyrande once more acknowledged this for all in attendance, but insisted more personally to the Prophet, "The final victory might not have been ours if not for you and your people, Velen. None here will deny that either."
"I am honored that you think so, but know that we will always be indebted to Azeroth. Thus, I come to promise you now that the Draenei will do all we can to help the various lands of the Alliance in whatever capacity we may best."
There was startled rumbling from the attendees, the Night Elves included. Malfurion leaned forward.
"Your people are not returning to Outland. We just assumed."
Velen smiled as if well aware that he would be faced with this very question.
"Some have been sent back to revitalize our civilization there, but the rest of us will remain here on Azeroth for so long as we are needed."
The High Priestess looked around at the others.
"I think that I speak for all of us when I say that this is a noble gesture for which we can only express again our own gratitude."
Most of the other representatives of the Alliance murmured their agreement. The Dark Irons were the only ones to look not entirely satisfied with this revelation. Velen looked pleased at this overall acceptance.
"Please join us, revered one," Tyrande added, immediately signaling the servers to add a seat next to Malfurion and her.
The two made certain that none of the other representatives would be deprived of space for this unexpected addition.
"I would be happy to join all my friends here. A little water is all I need."
Despite that insistence, Tyrande had some food and wine also brought. Some slight surprise at the announcement aside, the Draenei was a welcome guest. The banquet settled down. The mood lightened. Tyrande exchanged a hopeful look with Malfurion. From their right, just beyond Velen, Curdren let out a hearty laugh at something the Draenei said, drawing the Night Elves' attention. The Prophet looked mildly amused at the effect his words had had on the dwarf. Curdren turned to tell one of his countrymen something in regard to what he had heard from Velen, and paused to warily eye a party approaching. At the same time, the musicians, evidently also noting the newcomers, paused. Gen Greymane had arrived at last. The King of Gilneas was flanked by four of his people, three men and one woman. Edric was one of the escort, and he at present listened to something that Gen whispered. As before, the Gilneans looked like any other humans, though Gen's escort obviously consisted of seasoned fighters. If not for his confident stride and bearing, Gen might have simply been one more member of the band. He wore little ornamentation marking his regal status. The most evident sign of his rank was the Gilnean crest embossed on his shirt just over the heart, which Gen absently touched as he entered the gathering. The downfall of his kingdom had very much humbled the once haughty monarch. If there was anything to distinguish the Gilneans from most other humans, it was a wariness in their gazes as they neared. It was not a look of distrust, but rather of defiance. Yet defiance not against anyone in particular, but at the world in general. As they reached the center of the banquet, Gen raised his hand shoulder high. The other Gilneans stopped. The king took a half a dozen steps more, then halted in front of the Night Elves. My apologies. The delay was unavoidable. His eyes fixed on Velen. You must be Prophet Velen. I've heard much of you. I wasn't aware you'd be here. I am Gen Greymane. The prophet bowed his head.
Greetings, King of Gilneas. I am also familiar with you.
Tyrande and Malfurion rose, the former declaring,
Welcome, Gen Greymane. Please take your place with us.
Before I do, I must say something to all here. His announcement spurred glances of curiosity and concern among the other leaders and emissaries. Malfurion fought off a frown.
Please speak, Gen, the Archdruid finally encouraged.
We will be glad to listen. Malfurion's declaration quieted the others, though some, especially the Dark Irons, still watched with wariness and concern. The king nodded.
I'll make this short. I made some terrible decisions years ago. I abandoned the Alliance for what I thought was the right course for my people. That proved to be a sorry mistake.
He cleared his throat.
What I'm saying is that I thank you all for giving us this second chance.
With that, Gen bowed to the other guests, then led his party where they were to be seated. Rather than prolong what had clearly been an awkward moment for the human, Tyrande immediately signaled for the musicians to begin anew. She also made certain that the Gilneans were quickly fed and that the other guests had more drink and food brought to them. The meal progressed. Personal conversations began to develop, and a serious note crept into some aspects of the scene. Curdren had shifted over to Tervash to speak about something that caused the Archmage to frown but nod. Across from them, Drukin watched with narrowed eyes, then returned to his food. A moment later, though, he rose and, to their surprise, went to speak privately with the High Tinker.
"Do you think these conversations are a sign of hope? Or fragmentation?"
Malfurion quietly asked his mate, his serene face belying his concern.
"Each of their lands is trying to recover, as even we are. They are no doubt attempting to see what they might be able to gain from others. In a sense, that might bring them together, but only if they do not feel that they have to sacrifice too much in turn."
"Which means that you think these conversations are both."
Tyrande touched his hand.
"Yes, my love. Unfortunately, I do."
She smiled slightly.
"But at least they are talking, and that is something to work on."
He noticed her look past him.
"What is it?"
"There are two sentinels seeking our attention."
The Archdruid casually turned in that direction. Seeking their attention was an understatement. Clearly, only the fact that so many officials from the Alliance were gathered here prevented the pair from racing toward its leaders. The two had purposely kept where the vast majority of the banquet could not see them. Both gripped their weapons, frequently looking over their shoulders at something behind them.
"Stormwind, perhaps?" he asked.
The High Priestess rose.
"If so, from their stances, it cannot be good news."
He surveyed their guests, then muttered, "I am coming with you." She made no move to stop him. Velen looked up at her as she stepped away, nodding as if to show that if they needed his support, whatever the matter, he would give it. Some of the other guests watched as they departed, but the Night Elves pretended not to notice. Moving with measured steps, they finally reached the two sentinels. and there they discovered that behind the pair stood at least half a dozen more, along with a very dour Maiev. Tyrande wasted no time.
"Speak."
But it was Maiev, not the lead sentinel, who spoke. Stepping forward, she answered,
"High Priestess, there is a body."
The Archdruid looked grim. "Show us." Tyrande gave orders to one of her senior priestesses to take care of the guests. That problem dealt with, she and Malfurion followed the others from the vicinity of the banquet. Maiev and the sentinels headed directly for the temple.
"My decision," the Watcher informed them. "I thought it best."
"You did right," the High Priestess acknowledged. In one of the lesser-used inner chambers, they at last came across two sentinels guarding a night-elf-sized form covered in cloth.
"Who?"
Tyrande finally asked, unwilling to wait even long enough for the makeshift shroud to be drawn away. Maiev removed her helmet and tucked it under her arm. Gerard's sister stared directly at Malfurion.
"A highborn.
The one, I am told, you were informed went missing." One of the sentinels uncovered the face. As Maiev had said, it was a highborn. Malfurion knew immediately which one, too.
"Therabrin," the Archdruid rasped.
"Where was he discovered?"
"Not all that far from where I and the other Watchers practice," Maiev responded with a scowl.
Tyrande looked grave.
"He did not die by accident, did he?"
Maiev reached down and pulled the cloth further. The savage gaps just under the highborn's chin greeted the shocked duo.
"Only if he decided to slit his own throat twice. The second for pleasure, I assume."
She straightened.
"And made sure that a missive we found with him remained pinned to his body when he fell."
She spoke in a clinical tone, as if describing the general shape and appearance of a stone rather than the murder of one of their own. It did not at all surprise either Malfurion or Tyrande to hear her speak so. Maiev was ever precise, ever to the point, when performing her duties.
"What did this note say?"
the Archdruid demanded, a new chill running through him. Maiev was prepared. She handed him a ragged piece of parchment stained in great part with the unfortunate Therabrin's blood. On it had been scrawled in what also appeared to be the mage's bodily fluids, a message written in a long-disused style of night-elf script that stirred memories of the days when Zinashari was still the capital and the evil of Queen Azhara was as yet unknown. "Suffer not, traitors."
"We knew that there would be those who would never forgive them," Tyrande said.
"But we thought that they would listen to reason, at least up to the point of not going through with such a heinous act." The Archdruid returned his gaze to Maiev. "Found near where you practice?"
"Yes. Either someone thought him a gift, or they decided that the Watchers could be blamed."
Her declaration was not without merit. Maiev and her Watchers were among the many uncomfortable with the thought of the Highborn's eventual return to the fold.
"This will not remain a secret," Tyrande said, "and should not."
Malfurion agreed. "More important, we must find the assassins and deal with them before this grows worse. The timing can be no coincidence. This is not just about the Highborn. This is meant to cause chaos during the summit."
"You are right, my love.
I will ask Chandris." Suddenly kneeling before Tyrande, Maiev bent her head and declared,
"Let me uncover the culprits. I know the facts better than any. I have investigated the body for all clues and studied the area in which it was found. There is nothing more anyone else could do. Give this matter to me.
I swear I will do all in my power to see that those who would seek to foment unrest among our kind will be dealt with." Tyrande looked to Malfurion, who nodded. The High Priestess gently put a hand on Maiev's shoulder. The kneeling Night Elf looked up, gaze intent.
"I can think of few more dedicated to our people and their needs.
Take command of this investigation, Maiev, and do it with my blessing.
Some of the sentinels did not look entirely pleased with this choice, but held their peace. Maiev looked as if Tyranda had granted her the greatest desire of her life. She rose and saluted the pair.
I will see this through, whatever sacrifice it must take.
I insist you take care, Maiev. Gerard's sister grudgingly nodded, but her eyes did not show agreement. Both Tyranda and Malfurion were aware how focused Maiev could be when set upon a mission. In this case, they needed that focus, and thus neither said more to discourage the Warden from following through as she might need.
The Highborn will want Therabrin's body returned, Malfurion commented. I think it best if I lead that effort. They already believe that the rest of us would rather see them wiped from the face of Azeroth. This will hardly improve their disposition.
Do as you say.
The High Priestess touched his cheek. But take care around them.
You know that I will.
Maiev bowed her head again.
With your permission, I will begin this hunt immediately.
Tyranda nodded. Replacing her helmet, Maiev silently departed.
I will send four sentinels with you when you go to the Highborn, Tyranda informed her husband. They will act as bearers for the body.
Let me seek the aid of some of my calling. It might not be wise for the Highborn to be confronted by armed fighters just now.
She saw the wisdom in his choice.
Are you going to leave immediately?
Not just yet. I wish Velen's opinion on this and some other matters. I had not expected his arrival, but it may be that it was fortuitous. We will need his steady demeanor to keep temperatures from boiling over once all know of the murder. Every distrust among the various factions will suddenly rise to the forefront. It was decided that the sentinels would remain on guard here for as long as needed. Tyranda also summoned another pair of priestesses versed in the preserving arts to do what they could to maintain the freshness of the body. Aware that they could not let the Highborn wait long before being told of the discovery, the Archdruid and the High Priestess quickly returned to the banquet. They had feared that their absence might have caused a wariness to settle over the other participants, but to their relief, everyone still seemed at ease. Part of that likely had to do with Velen, who had departed his seat to speak with the Dark Irons. What matter there was that would bring the Draenei and the dwarves together, neither Night Elf could say, but Velen had somehow managed not only to keep Drukhan distracted, but also to make him feel cheered.
The light truly works in amazing ways, Malfurion murmured to his wife. And Velen is clearly schooled in the art of diplomacy.
Tyranda hesitated as she saw another sentinel approaching. More news.
The sentinel saluted and immediately said, High Priestess, Stormwind has arrived. The news brought both relief and concern to Malfurion and his mate. Tyranda asked, How long ago?
When I left with this news, they had just disembarked. I searched for you here but could not find you.
The High Priestess eyed her husband.
The attendants on duty at the portal have orders to guide the party to their quarters, but I should go and greet Varian.
To their other side, Gen Greymane's voice suddenly rose above the din. He had an audience that consisted of most of Curdren's party. Gen, clearly much more relaxed due to not only the acceptance the others had shown, but also the dwarven ale he had just finished downing, had begun regaling the others with some of his past battles against the Horde.
The key was to keep our front united, the king was saying as Malfurion and Tyranda moved on toward Velen. Split us apart and we'd all be crow food. Each man knew that to falter would mean his comrades dying for his mistake, and none would have that. We let out the Gilnean battle cry, consisting of a pleading for mercy so great the orcs no doubt turned from the lot of you in disgust, said a mocking voice. The effect of the words on Gen Greymane was immediate.
He leapt up from the table, in his fury sweeping aside the food and drink before him without care to where or upon whom it landed. A dark cast fell upon his features, and for a moment he seemed to swell and even begin to change.
"Who dares spout such a monstrous slur upon me and Gilneas? Who?"
His outraged gaze swiftly poured over each and every person seated there, seeking the culprit. Most simply stared back, as stunned as he at the savage pronouncement. A few looked about anxiously. And a few, such as Malfurion and Tyranda, looked from Gen Greymane to the direction from where the speaker actually stood. Malfurion took a step toward the commanding figure, but the High Priestess stayed him with a hand. The King of Gilneas caught their movement. He followed their eyes to his accuser.
"You!"
And having swayed the orcs so eloquently, you no doubt did as all brave Gilneans do so well, skulked away and hid until the battle was over.
Gen clearly desired to lunge for his counterpart's throat. His hands grasped at the air as if already crushing in the windpipe. Yet somehow he managed to stay his ground and simply growl. For his reaction, he received nothing but a look of contempt from the newcomer, who then, with a much more polite manner, turned to the banquet's hosts and bowed. "High Priestess Tyranda, Archdruid Malfurion, it's a pleasure to see you again," Varian Wrynn calmly remarked. Chapter 11. Darkened Hearts.
"Never, never have I nor any of my warriors acted so basely,"
Gen declared, visibly struggling with himself.
"The bravery of Gilneas."
"Bravery?" Varian Wrynn cut in. Tall, commanding, his features handsome in a brooding manner, the King of Stormwind was to his own people already a hero out of legend. He had, in point of fact, lived a remarkable and dangerous life that had not only for years separated him from those he most loved, but also left him for a time bereft of his memory. His trials made for rousing tales that bards could sing before swooning ladies. And his two long scars, one running across his cheeks and the bridge of his nose, and the other descending down the left side of his face from the forehead to the cheek, both legacies of the several times he had barely escaped death, only added more flavor to those stories. Stories for which Varian himself had no taste whatsoever.
"The definition must be different in Gilneas from what it is in most other lands.
The very opposite, I'd say."
The insinuation that Gen and his people were utter cowards proved too much for the elder monarch. His expression darkened. Some of those in his retinue growled low and seemed ready to move toward Varian, but Gen staved off their advance with a sharp glance. Malfurion moved to intervene.
"King Varian, we had no news of you and your retinue arriving below."
"I preferred it that way," the former gladiator answered, acting now as if Gen did not even exist. Varian shoved aside an unruly lock of dark brown hair. The eyes of a hunter surveyed each and every person in sight, Varian Wrynn ever instinctively marking those around him by their potential threat. The Archdruid purposely stood between the pair.
"And your son? Is Anduin with you?"
"Naturally."
Varian said it with such an absolute tone that Malfurion felt slightly foolish for asking. Though many monarchs would have left their only heirs in the supposed safety of home rather than bringing them on any sort of journey. The king briefly tilted his head back. The night elf looked beyond Varian to where four members of the king's personal guard flanked a slightly shorter figure dressed in the regal blue and gold of Stormwind. Prince Anduin, his own blonde hair cut short, bowed his head to the Archdruid. He wore a high-collared shirt covered by mail that was in turn draped by the golden lion-head crest of his kingdom. The prince was not armed, save for a dagger at his belt, but with so many guards in Stormwind's party,
his safety would have been ensured in almost any place, much less Darnassus. In contrast to his father, who was every bit the fighter, Anduin was a studious youth. Moreover, there was an aura of selflessness that reminded Malfurion of only one other person present. Without thinking, Malfurion glanced over his shoulder at Velen. To his surprise, the prophet's eyes registered the same intense interest in the human boy. Velen sensed exactly what Malfurion did. Perhaps more. Gen was taking long, deep breaths that were designed to bring his temper back under control. Varian looked unimpressed by the other king's efforts. The archdruid continued to try to defuse the tension between them. King Varian, forgive us for not being there to greet you. You, your son, and your companions are welcome to join the banquet immediately if you wish. Your seats await you, and food and drink will be shortly coming. I'm not inclined to stay here, the monarch of Stormwind bluntly replied. I sailed to Darnassus for the sake of the Alliance, not him. He indicated Gen. If it's all the same to you, Archdruid, the journey was a tiring one, so I think I'll retire already. Gen moved toward his counterpart again. In a lower tone he said, Varian, let us talk. I did what I thought was best for my people. You must understand that. I never realized the full folly of my arrogance when I chose to build the wall and what it would mean, cutting off Gilneas from the outside. Varian's gaze never left the archdruid. He said nothing to Gen. This only stirred the king of Gilneas to further effort. I swear an oath that we will be as brothers to all other members of the Alliance, that we will give aid in whatever manner needed. Gilneas will not shirk its duty. There will be no more loyal member, especially to its fellow human realm, Stormwind. Stormwind wants no such brother at its back, Varian burst out. Varian, Malfurion murmured. The younger king's body shook from fury. He lowered his gaze, staring bitterly at Gen from under his brow. I didn't ask to wear the mantle of responsibility, to become the bearer of humanity's standard. It was enough to rule Stormwind and protect my son. But I did it because I had no choice. Who else was there? Not Gilneas. Stormwind, with Theramore at its side, has had to face the dangers, and now you want to come in under our wing and pretend you'll stand with us this time? We will stand. You needn't worry yourself, Greymane. Stormwind and I have done without you, without Gilneas, and certainly without the Worgen, and we'll continue to do so. What you truly desire is redemption for your traitorous crimes, which you'll not get from me. Gilneas was a sovereign nation. We seceded during a time of peace, not war, and for good reasons. You know that. As for the coming vote... However, Varian turned his back on the other human. Excuse me, Archdruid and High Priestess, I will see you later. Before Malfurion could even respond, Varian whirled back the way he had come and stalked off. In his wake followed his retinue. Malfurion looked at Tyrande, who had already signaled a pair of priestesses to hurry after King Varian. As she focused in Malfurion's direction, her eyes widened. A low animalistic snarl escaped from where Gen stood. The archdruid immediately returned his attention to the human. Gen bared his teeth in a feral grin that stretched far beyond where human limits should have allowed. His body swelled. And then, again, the human regained control of himself.
Forgive me, archdruid, the sweating figure muttered. I should have known better. I should have.
I suggest you return to your seat and...
No. No, I can't.
Gen gestured to Edric and the other Gilneans. With Gen in their lead, the party silently departed for the forest. The other guests murmured among themselves. Tyrande indicated for the musicians to play again, but it was clear that the banquet would soon be winding down.
The confrontation had eradicated the hopeful mood of the participants, a situation that Malfurion would have to work hard to correct. However, as he turned to discuss this with his mate, he noticed that one member of Stormwind's party had not left. Anduin, who was at this moment quietly speaking with Felon. As the Night Elves approached the pair, they heard the Draenei saying,
"And what you know of the Light is indeed true, but that is only the slightest of its many facets, young Anduin. To fully appreciate the wonder of the Light, you must look at it from the perspective that best lets you see its full place in the universe, and how it may become part of our very being. Such requires patience and learning."
"I can do that. But what I want..."
"Prince Anduin." Two of the king's personal guard had returned. Their flushed faces and hurried movements bespoke of the intense reprimand their monarch had no doubt given them upon discovering that his son was not with the party. The two burly soldiers barged past the Night Elves and came at their prince from opposing sides. The one who had called to the prince, a hardened veteran with a nose that looked as if it had been broken more than once in battle, reached for Anduin, who did not hide his frustration as he rose to face the guards.
"Prince Anduin, your father was most upset when he discovered that you'd neglected to follow us. The king has commanded that you come immediately."
Anduin looked as if he were ready to snap something at the unfortunate guards, who all knew were only doing their duty and likely feared being punished, but held back. With a resigned nod, the prince joined his two keepers. He briefly turned to face the Night Elves and the others, bowing to each group. Only then did he silently gesture to the two anxious men to lead him to his father.
"Young Anduin has a quiet strength," Velen commented once the boy was gone. "A pity his father seeks to cage him, as he does himself."
"Varian nearly lost him more than once," the Archdruid remarked. "His fear that Anduin might vanish or be taken is not unfounded."
Malfurion frowned deeply.
"Nor are his harsh words to Gen Greymane, I am sorry to say."
"Gen will make amends for all," Tyrande interjected. "You know that as well as I. We already know how much he sacrificed to get matters to this point."
"But will it be worth it in the end?
They nearly attacked one another. Gen came very close to losing control of himself, and with some reason."
"Perhaps we should discuss this at another time," the High Priestess commented. "Velen, if you could..."
But to the surprise of both Night Elves, the Prophet had surreptitiously departed the conversation, almost as if he knew the two were about to enter into subjects best discussed purely between them.
"Well, we can trust Velen, that is for certain," Malfurion murmured. Then, sobering, he added,
"Tyrande, before you speak, I have to tell you.
He is the one, Mal."
"I know Ilun tells you so, and I understand that it should be so.
But you saw him.
Varian could perhaps be the leader the Alliance needs, yet he also stands a very good chance of becoming the one who further guides it to disaster."
"Varian is troubled, I agree."
"More than troubled, though with good cause." The Archdruid tugged on his beard in contemplation. "And his disdain for Gen strikes me as being as much for himself as it is for the King of Gilneas. There was that in his tone that hinted more of self-reproach."
"I heard that also."
The High Priestess casually glanced to her side.
"The others are beginning to leave. The banquet is over."
"The banquet was a debacle. The others here have seen Varian proclaim the Worgen unfit to be part of the Alliance. We cannot let that notion stand."
"I will go speak with the others.
Perhaps you can do something with Varian." "Perhaps." Malfurion could not hide his doubt concerning such a hope. She put her hand on his.
"Ilun will guide us. Have faith."
He grunted.
"I, of all people, should I not?"
"Go. Speak with Varian."
Malfurion knew better than to argue when she used that tone. They kissed, Then the Archdruid, with a bow to the remaining guests, followed after the King of Stormwind. To someone who had slept in bug-infested cages and grimy, blood-soaked cells during his days as a slave and gladiator, the woodland quarters offered by his hosts seemed far too soft in comparison. Even Varian's chambers back home were not nearly so calm, so peaceful. The king considered departing Darnassus for the relative familiarity of his confining quarters aboard ship, but respected his hosts enough not to insult them. Or at least not insult them any more than he had with his denunciation of Ghen Greymane. Varian had no regrets there. In fact, he had a rather great satisfaction. He knew that he had behaved badly, but in Greymane he had found an outlet for some of the fire ever raging within him. There was a knock at the door. The Night Elves had gone out of their way to make their guests feel at home, and so the chambers set aside for Varian and his retinue were fairly human in design and accommodations. Unfortunately, they still had that nature feel he always associated with those of the Archdruid's race. Far better were the oppressive stone walls of the keep. One of the guards cautiously opened the door. Even in Darnassus one did not take chances. Varian had already caught wind of something amiss, something that had happened just before his arrival. Anduin and the two bodyguards sent to retrieve him entered. Varian, his heart lightening, went straight to his son.
"You had me worried."
To the two men he growled, "Let this not happen again. Should any harm come to my son, I will have—"
"Leave it be, father."
Anduin spoke quietly, ever calmly, but still he did momentarily what no one else could. Silence the king. Recovering, Varian said, "Anduin, you must understand. You are the Prince of Stormwind. Nowhere, not even here, should be considered safe enough for you to go wandering off. You always need at least a guard with you." "Yes, I'm not very good at defending myself," the prince retorted. "I'm not the great warrior you are. You and Magni have already seen how badly I handle a sword, even in practice." "I didn't mean—" The prince sighed. It was a sound Varian heard often, and usually because of something he had done out of concern for his son.
"No, you don't. You never do, father. I'm back, safe and sound, as usual."
"Anduin, against any foe, the king could stand resolute in his next move. Against his son, he constantly floundered."
"Good night, father."
The prince walked on, following his guards to the room set aside for him. As unsettling as the conversation no doubt had been to their guards, Anduin had actually kept it from getting worse by cutting it off. Varian knew that, could even appreciate it. But that still did not ease the sting of his son's obvious reprimand. Now the serenity of the Night Elven dwelling finally proved too much for him. "Stay here," he commanded the guards, aware as much as they that he was placing them in a similar position as when Anduin had not remained with the party. "I need to walk." They knew better than to argue. No longer paying them any heed, Varian strode out. However, like in his quarters, the tranquility of the capital did nothing to ease his heart. Instead, he stared at the forest beyond. His pace quickened. The wilderness beckoned. "King Varian, I was just coming to see you." The human hid his disappointment, though for a moment his eyes lingered longingly on the trees beyond the city. "Archdruid," he responded, finally acknowledging his host.
"My thanks for our quarters. They will do just fine."
"Which is why you had to flee them at the first chance," the Night Elf returned with a slight smile. "Please, I will not stand on ceremony with you. Call me Malfurion."
"Then I'll ask you to call me Varian."
"As you wish. If you do not mind, I hoped to have a word with you." The Lord of Stormwind exhaled.
"My sincerest apologies for ruining your banquet."
The banquet is of no consequence. The gathering is. You appreciate bluntness, Varian. I am more concerned about your confrontation with Gen. The mere mention of Greymane's name stirred the embers within. Varian's pulse pounded. I'd prefer not to speak about that, Malfurion. The Night Elf would not be dissuaded. Varian, I must ask you to consider everything that happens before, during, and after the summit in light of what Azeroth has become due to the Cataclysm. Each choice we make has to be carefully weighed.
You're referring to the induction?
Of course. I hope you will see reason. The king no longer had any desire to head to the forest.
Is there nowhere I can be free?
Malfurion was clearly intent on pressing forward with his point. Varian could see only one way to at least end the conversation. I'll give Gen and the Worgen a fair consideration. You have my word. Malfurion heard the finality in his voice, and wisely accepted the answer as it was. Thank you, Varian. That is all I can ask. Another figure intruded upon them. Varian fought down his impatience with the seemingly never-ending situation. His trained eyes took in the newcomer, who, though a night elf, was dressed in a colorful outfit that the king thought Malfurion surely also found gaudy.
Archdruid Stormrage, the other greeted solemnly.
Varden. Varian's sharp ears caught a slight inflection in the night elf's voice, as if the archdruid not only knew what this other figure wanted, but dreaded it for some reason. Exactly what the other elf was finally registered with Varian. He recalled the reports. So this is a highborn. The highborn barely seemed to notice the human. The king recalled the apparent arrogance of Varden's kind. He also remembered that they were magi, and reckless ones at that. The archdruid said, I thank you for your time and your reply, Varian. I look forward to speaking with you further. The king took advantage of the situation.
Naturally. Forgive me now. I must be going. Good evening.
He did not even acknowledge the highborn as he left, thinking that the other elf did not deserve any better than he gave. Varian gratefully departed the pair, silently wishing he had never sailed from Stormwind. A slight movement in the trees nearby caught the corner of his eye. Varian did not focus on it, aware that by the time he turned, the source would be gone from sight. Besides, the king was fairly certain just what had been lurking at the forest's edge. His scowl deepened. Under his breath, he muttered,
Damned Worgen.
Varden did not speak until the human was long gone. Malfurion, aware of the news he had not yet had the opportunity to present to the Highborn, solemnly waited. The archdruid wanted to hear Varden out to see how much the latter knew.
I am here concerning the disappearance, Varden bluntly stated. You know that.
Malfurion waited for the Highborn to continue, but that apparently was all the mage wished to say for the moment. Instead, Varden looked expectantly at the archdruid.
There is no use delaying the inevitable, Malfurion thought. So, Maiev Shadowsong has informed the Highborn of everything already.
He got no further. Varden's perplexed expression told him that the mage had no idea whatsoever about anything concerning Maiev, or her discovery.
What should we know about Archdruid?
Therabrin is dead. Murdered.
Varden stiffened. Tell me.
Malfurion did, leaving out no detail. The spellcaster remained stone-faced throughout. The only true sign of his growing fury was his hands, which folded into tight fists and stayed so.
The body will be returned to us immediately,
Varden declared when Malfurion finished. His voice held no emotion. He stared past the other night elf as if seeing something far, far away.
There will be no further desecration of it by anyone for any reason.
That was the intention. Maiev.
Yes. The warden.
She can continue with her investigation, but she will not speak with us. If there is anything we learn, we will relate it to you, Archdruid.